Okay. So what to think in order to, you know, be aware of our teacher's good qualities and to think of them as Buddhas. And here's the first point in this, that Vajradhara asserted that high teachers are Buddhas. This point is really difficult for Westerners, okay, because here there's a lot of quotations from the Havajra root tantra and the Sutra of the White Lotus of the Dharma and these different sutras in which the Buddha appeared in the in his tantric form as Vajradhara. Vajradhara is just Shakyamuni Buddha when he taught the tantric teachings. And in these teachings, Vajradhara said, in the time of degenerations, which our time is, then he will, you know, that the Buddhas will appear in the form of ordinary beings as spiritual masters in order to guide us. In other words, that because the times are so degenerate, and even if the Buddhas appeared in their glorious aspects, we couldn't perceive them, then, therefore, they appear in ordinary aspects as human beings, as our teachers. So Vajradhara said this in the Tantra. Now, what is difficult about this is that we Westerners say, who in the world is Vajradhara? You know? Well, why should I believe Vajradhara anyway? Who is this guy? He's blue? So this point is, you know, it's more difficult for us because we don't have this kind of spontaneous faith in Vajradhara. But if, you know, this is like citing scriptural reference to prove that actually the Buddha did give some indication at the time he was alive that, you know, he and other Buddhas would appear in ordinary aspects as our teachers. Yeah, so that's all that this is coming down to, that there was, you know, that the Buddha actually spoke about these things and it was written in the scriptures. Yeah. Then, I mean, we have to all determine ourselves how much faith we place in what's written in the scriptures, because each of us is going to vary in that. And as we practice, our belief in the scriptures, you know, is going to change. So if that, you know, if that point hits you hard, you know, that the Buddha gave some indications while he was alive that he'd come back this way, great. If it doesn't, don't worry, because there's a few more reasons. Okay. A second reason is that our teachers are the media for conveying the Buddha's enlightening influence to us. Okay, so the Buddha's enlightening influence is this ability to generate realizations within us. In other words, the ability to connect, to, you know, spark something in our mind. And so our teachers are the media for conveying that. So, you know, the Buddha's great realization, you know, the Dharmakaya mind of the Buddha, the mind of wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, is something intangible. We can't see it, we can't touch it, we can't talk to it. So there needs to be a media of communication between those great realizations of wisdom and compassion and us ordinary beings who are so stuck in materiality. And so our teachers are that media of communication. They give an example in the scriptures of when the sun shines, if you have a magnifying glass, it like focuses all the rays of the suns and you can actually start a fire. Okay? So there they would say like the sun's rays are like the Buddha's enlightening influence. But in order to start the fire, which is like the realizations in our mind, we need the magnifying glass. We need the thing that's going to draw and focus all those light rays together. And so in that way, our teacher is like that vehicle of transporting the Buddha's enlightening influence so that it can ignite the realizations in our mind. Then, the next point is that in this, I should say in the previous point, that the teachers perform the work of the Buddha. So how can we respect the three jewels and the Buddha, but not respect the people that perform the work for them? Okay? So if the teacher is the one performing the work, acting as this medium of communication, it wouldn't be logical to, you know, kind of respect the Buddhas, but then this person who's bringing it all to us, we kind of disregard their qualities. Okay? And so in that way, all the teachers inspire us to have a receptive state of mind. And this they do through their actions, through the good influence they have on us, through the teachings, through the example they set, and so on. Then the next reason why we can see their good qualities, or see them as the Buddhas, is that in this degenerate age, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas still work for the benefit of sentient beings. And I must say that this was the point that, you know, personally speaking, you know, the first two points I said, yeah, well, okay, that makes some sense. But this point, I remember when Second Rinpoche explained this, it was like I went, okay, I'm convinced. Because what he said was that the whole reason that all the Buddhas became Buddhas, in other words, all these beings were ordinary, regular, confused people like us, the whole reason they practiced the path to become Buddhas was so that they could benefit the rest of us. Now, if somebody became a Buddha for the sole purpose of benefiting others, and then didn't benefit anybody, didn't communicate with ordinary beings at all, so what's the purpose of what they did? Yeah? So it's like, what, you know, if somebody's become a Buddha, then it's like it was only for the purpose of communicating with other beings. It's only for the purpose of helping other beings. There's no other reason. So if the Buddhas are fully committed to helping other beings, how are they going to do it? What's the most effective way as becoming spiritual masters, as appearing in that aspect to really teach us and guide us? Yeah. And if we say that the Buddhas can appear, you know, again, according to our karma, in whatsoever beneficial form, they can even appear as physical objects if, you know, we have the karma to be benefited in that way. So if the Buddha can even appear as physical objects or as dogs and cats, then surely they can appear as spiritual masters, because it's so clear the good influence that we receive from having a teacher. Yeah. So for the Buddha, you know, for beings to become Buddhas and then not help us by teaching us, then it's like, what are they, you know, they're contradicting themselves? So I think this was the point that kind of really, personally speaking again, just said, okay. Got to give some space for my mind in this. Now, and then another reason why this is possible to see is that our own opinions aren't always reliable. Now, we like to think our own opinions are supremely reliable. However, it just looking in an ordinary way, we hold people in high regard if they agree with us. Yeah? If they don't agree with our opinions, then we don't have much regard for them. Yeah? And then if you think back in your life how much you've changed your opinions, and so how much you've changed the people you hold in regard, and each time you hold somebody in your regard, you think, this is it, this person's fantastic. Then you begin to see that, well, yeah, maybe my opinions really aren't so reliable. Yeah. So they give the example in the teachings, you know, especially about this, that we like, you know, how we like people who agree with us. Yeah. So if the student likes to go to bed early and the teacher likes to go to bed late, then the student doesn't like the teacher and criticizes, yeah? Not even, you know, oh, this teacher's so bad, blah, 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 blah. But what's really going on is, this guy's keeping me up and I want to go off to bed. Yeah? So we tend to criticize anything that doesn't agree with what we're attached to. Yeah? So our teacher does things in a different way than we do, and we criticize them. Yeah. Or they say things to us that we don't understand, and instead of checking up what they're saying and trying to understand, we just criticize. Okay. So the whole point we're getting to is how to help us realize how judgmental and how fickle our own minds are and how really unreliable they are. And so when we can realize this, then we really begin to understand how much we project onto other people. And so, in that way, understand that when we see things that maybe appear in our eyes negative, we see actions or things of our teacher and they appear negative to us, instead of believing that appearance, to remember the fact that our own opinions aren't reliable. Okay? But we project a lot onto other people. I'm sure, again, we can see this with ordinary people. Somebody's acting a certain way, and we look at them, and we have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. But we project onto them the reason, the motivation we would have if we were acting like that. And usually it's a negative motivation, isn't it? You know, oh, look, that person's showing off because they want blah, 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 blah. Well, maybe their motivation isn't to show off at all. But if we acted like that, we would be showing off. So we project our garbage onto other people. So if we do this onto ordinary people in our lives, we also do it onto our spiritual teachers. And so if you're aware of that, then whenever you see something that appears negative in your teacher, you begin to, you know, instead of doing our old usual trick of judging and condemning, we start to say, what is this saying about my mind? Okay? In other words, how I'm seeing other people isn't saying so much about what they are, it's saying something about me and my mind. So if I'm seeing, you know, this spiritual teacher, somebody who I've had incredible confidence in, who I've chosen because I've had confidence that they can guide me to enlightenment, and I've seen their qualities, and now I'm looking at them and all I see is garbage, what's this saying about my mind and where I'm at? Yeah? And so I think this is a very good technique to use when we start to see negative qualities, to see it as a way to explore what's going on inside of us. And then, like I said last week also, if we see a teacher doing something, you know, our own personal teacher doing something, to see it that we don't like quite so much, to say, this is what we look like when we're acting like that. So they're really showing us. You know, because very often, I mean, if our teacher comes up to us and says, you know, you're always getting angry and you're really so disagreeable and blah, 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 and just tells us to our face our negative qualities, we're likely to get very, very upset, you know. So what does our teacher do? I mean, because we're so close to listening to bad feedback about ourselves, our teacher shows us in you know, their own behavior what our actions look like. Yeah? And so then we can see in that behavior, you know, they're doing that, and we think, that's what I look like when I'm doing that. Yeah? I mean, this is a way for me to learn something about myself. And this kind of way of thinking in relationship to your own personal teacher is very, very valuable. So I think, yeah, I mean, I just, again, in terms of my own experience, I see this as a really, I've constantly, you know, in trying to practice this, coming up against my own preconceptions. Because when my teachers act in ways that, you know, I don't think they should act. I mean, it's not like they're being unethical. It's just their whole way, maybe their whole way of doing things. Yeah, it's just very different than the way I do things. You know, and my instantaneous reaction is, well, everybody should do things the way I do. Yeah, because, I mean, clearly I think, you know, that this is more efficient and my plan is very efficient. And, you know, can't this person see that in this situation, this is the most efficient way to run the thing. Yeah. And And so it's so easy to get judgmental, and then if I stop and think about it, well, maybe there's other ways to do things besides my way. And then I begin to stretch my mind, and I try and think, well, how is my teacher looking at this thing? And, you know, maybe efficiency isn't the highest quality to hold in this situation. Yeah, maybe the approach to organizing something, the best thing isn't efficiency. Maybe it's the benefit other people receive from the way it's organized or from working through all the hassles in it. Yeah, but my mind's just so goal-oriented that I want to see the goal, you know. But my teacher's more interested in the process and so approaches it in a different way. You know, so why should I be so judgmental and discriminatory? Maybe just relax, you know, sit back and observe and watch these things unfold and try and learn from this person's example. Okay. So these are just some ways to try and approach this. Now, this, you know, if it happens that maybe your teacher is doing something that, you know, contradicts Buddhist precepts, or that it is something that appears in your eyes to be extremely unethical. You know, like I told you the story last time of my friend and his teacher was an alcoholic, or, you know, maybe your teacher goes off and, I don't know, does something else that you consider unethical. Then, you know, you don't need to sit there and whitewash this behavior and say, well, this person is a Buddha and everything they're doing is pure. His Holiness, in fact, says that just trying to whitewash everything and say this person is a Buddha and all their actions are perfect, that this can actually be poison. Yeah? So in these situations where it's something that seems definitely unethical to you, then two things, you know. First of all, you can go and speak to the teacher and say, what's happening? I don't understand why you're doing this, and this is very confusing to me. Can you explain the behavior? You know, and you do this with a respectful mind, not with a harsh, critical mind, but you go and ask for more information. And if you're not satisfied by what you're hearing, and it doesn't seem to be a good reason, then you just keep your distance. Again, without criticizing, because people had to their teachers and the incredible benefit they get from it. So then we think, you know, yeah. Well, my teacher told me to jump off a cliff. Am I going to jump off a cliff? And we get really caught up like, well, if I don't jump off this cliff, then I'm this horrible disciple, you know, and I'm going to go to the hell realms forever because I'm not following the guru's instructions. And I'm not like Naropa, and I should be like Naropa, so I'm going to jump, you know. Okay? So this is what we have to understand when we're listening to these stories of the lineage lamas is that they were incredibly highly realized beings. Yeah? So Naropa could jump off a cliff and it didn't even look like a cliff to him. You know, I mean, his mind is in the middle of a realization of emptiness and he probably has all sorts of psychic powers so that he doesn't kill himself when he jumps off the cliff. Yeah, and he's seeing everything in his pure vision as a mandala. So, I mean, we shouldn't be thinking that, you know, because Naropa did that, we can do that. Yeah, in the same way, you know, some people, like they may have teachers and their teachers may drink. Well, that's fine. If a teacher doesn't have a precept to abandon alcohol, they aren't ordained as a monk or nun, and they don't have the lay precept to drink, well, they're not breaking any precepts if they drink. But, and that teacher may be a highly realized being, and when they drink, it's one thing. But we shouldn't think, well, my teacher drinks, therefore, you know, because if we can't handle the alcohol, okay? And see, this is where a lot of people in America go off balance in this thing of trying to have a pure view of the teacher, is that they think, you know, well, my teacher does that, you know, and I'm following my teacher's example. My teacher's sleeping around with a lot of people. Well, I'm going to too. You know, and that's not the point. Okay? What your teacher does is your teacher's business. You know, and you screen that teacher beforehand and, you know about this behavior, and if that's acceptable to you, accept that person as a teacher. If it's not, go somewhere else where somebody acts differently. But if you accept that person as your teacher, don't think that you can necessarily do everything they do. But they might have realizations and, you know, we're just like Joe Blow. Okay? So this is an important point. Some of the stories, this was an extremely interesting point. In Newport Beach a couple of years ago, you know, when I went down to that conference, then they had a panel discussion with some psychologists and all, and some of these people, you know, were Buddhists. And this one guy, he brought up a really good point to His Holiness. And he said a lot of these stories that they tell in the scriptures, it makes it sound like that to be a good student, you have to let yourself be abused. Okay? Like Naropa jumping off the cliff because Tilopa told him to. Like Milarepa building all those towers out of stone and tearing them down because Marpa told him to. Like there's one bodhisattva called, the bodhisattva was always crying, and he had so much respect for his teacher. You know, I mean, just so much incredible longing to hear the Dharma and respect for his teacher that he had to clean the room where his teacher was going to teach beforehand. And in India, you know, the ancient India, all the floors were made of dirt. So usually to clean a dirt floor, you have to throw water on it so the dirt doesn't fly all over. And you sprinkle water and then you brush it and then you gather the dirt away that way. Well, he couldn't find any water to sprinkle on the floor. So he cut his wrist and used his own blood to sprinkle on the floor to clean the room before his teacher came in to give teaching. And so we hear that and think, I have to... do I have to do all these, you know... I mean, and it really seems, I mean, what this guy brought up is it is superficially, to our appearance, it looks like you have to be willing to be let yourself be abused in order to be a good disciple. So this guy, you know, and that's what the stories look like in our opinion, in our eyes. And so this man asked His Holiness, you know, and said this to His Holiness, and His Holiness says, you know, that's not the thing. In other words, having a good relationship with your teacher, having confidence in your teacher, does not mean that you let yourself be abused. It does not mean that you give up your own responsibility in life to make decisions. It does not mean that you give up your own wisdom and just like follow blindly. Okay? The whole purpose of having a spiritual teacher is to increase our wisdom, not to diminish it. So if some of these highly realized beings can do this kind of behavior, that's fine because their mind is in a completely different place. But if in our case, it's with the level of our mind, it looks in our case to be a thing of abuse, whether the teacher from their side is trying to abuse us or not, we don't know. Okay? But if our mind is taking it in this way, then as our own, as symbolic of our own dignity, our own exercise of responsibility and wisdom, then we have to go to the teacher and say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. You know? And you explain it with respect. Yeah. And His Holiness also says, you know, again on this line of things that are being contradictory, he says, although, you know, in the tantra, you're supposed to follow, you know, your teacher's instructions. If your teacher tells you to go to the east and he points to the west, you have no choice but to go and say, I don't understand. You know, I can't follow that. So this is, you know, really something to remember.